Welcome to Recovery Internet Radio, broadcast direct from Straight Up Studios. I'd like to take a moment to give a special thanks to a couple of our sponsors. Rose Painting and Drywall, decorating Chicagoland since 1967. For a quote, give Tom a call at area code 815-735-4654. That's 815-735-4654.
4654?
4654.
Okay, just checking.
Yeah. All right. You know what? Also, I'd like to give a thanks to Tammy's Pizza and Pasta, two great locations, one in Spring Grove and one in beautiful downtown Richmond. Best pizza and pasta you'll ever have. Check them out at tammyspizzapasta.com for a list of menu items, location, directions, phone number, whatever you need, I guess.
Just go to the website, and then go directly to the restaurant.
Just skip the website and go to the restaurant.
Go to the restaurant.
Yeah, it'll taste much better.
Right.
And this is our host already here, Mr. Rick Atwater, ladies and gentlemen.
Thanks, Chris. Welcome to Recovery Internet Radio and our show, Straight Stuff on Addictions. Our tag tonight is Matches and Gas, Two Friends Reunite in Recovery. So thanks for joining us tonight where we are every Sunday night at 8, and thanks to our engineer, sidekick, and his latest title is Nerd.
Resident Nerd.
Resident Nerd. Mm-hmm. Keeping us up and running, Chris Atwater. And our intro music, which we haven't credited recently, but Brendan O. is still our intro music person.
Keeping things happening.
Thank you, Brendan.
Brendan O.
And I actually think Brendan O. has some new music out. I can't remember the name of his band, so I can't plug it. But next week I'll do so. Anyway, you can call into the show for questions, comments, or opinions at 323-792-2977. And I have noticed that it is the same number every week.
Every single week.
That is.
How convenient.
323-792-2977 or tweet at Rick Atwater.
Yeah, you can actually tweet live tweet if you do that sort of thing. I mean, we've got, I know, all 21 people that follow at Rick Atwater.
Right, right.
You know,
my popularity
is... Once we get up to 50, I think we might have to have a party. But you can tweet us live. I checked this while we're talking here. You can listen to the show.
And tweet.
Go to Twitter. Say, hey, at Rick Atwater, I've got a question tonight. And we can see that and answer you live.
Or make that call.
Make that call.
Matt's gonna tweet right now.
I like it.
I was thinking about tweeting.
Yeah, that would be fun. Also, remember to check recoveryinternetradio.com. That's us, recoveryinternetradio.com for all our archive shows and recovery resources.
Yeah, everything's on there. The phone number's on there. You can link to the show live, all the archives. Check it out.
We also... As I've said in the last couple of weeks, we don't know, because we're an internet radio show, we don't know where our listeners are. Oh, but I was told, this is interesting.
Okay.
This is an interesting
Sounds
note.
Like news, sorry.
We have, yeah, newsflash. We have listeners in Turkey.
Hey.
Yes, we have Turkish listeners. That's true. That's a true thing. We also have at least one listener, maybe two, in Germany.
All right. Wow. Yep.
So I'm feeling pretty frisky about that.
You're a regular international crowd here.
Yeah, we're international now. So anyway, but we would like to hear from you. We'd love for you to go to the website and sign up for our program reminder. And also, that way we'll know, you know, if you email us, we'll know where you're from and we'll know where our listeners are from. That would be very interesting. Pins on a map. So,
let us know.
We're going to get going with tonight's show, Matches and Gas. And our guest tonight is Matt S. We were going to have I don't know if we got the matches or the gas here tonight.
I think we're matchless.
We're matchless. We got the gas.
Yes.
Okay. I was thinking you were going to pin it on him.
Mm-hmm. You're half of the matches and gas.
Half of the matches and gas. Yes. So maybe you could start by telling us. Well, give us the story first. Give us the overview of why we decided to do this show.
Sure. Well, thanks for having me, Rick. Thanks for doing what you do, Chris.
Absolutely.
And it's really cool to have an opportunity to give back to the recovery community that's saved my life and continues to. So, in Jim's defense, he had some father duties this evening. Jim and I met a long time ago, back in, I want to say, 91. We were beginning a sophomore year in high school. And then, the very, very short version of the story is we were crazy together for, call it, 7-8 years.
Mm-hmm.
Separated for 10, didn't see each other, and then reunited in, I want to say, 09.
Mm.
And had miraculously both found recovery.
Mm.
After not talking for a decade. So that's the really short version. And it was like mayhem before, and then, we both found our bottoms without really knowing each other.
Individual mayhem up until, certain point, yeah.
And then, he literally was like samples as I'm walking through Dick's Sporting Goods.
Mm-hmm.
And I walked by and I said, Jim. And he was with his son, and we exchanged phone numbers, and something seemed different about him.
Yeah. Were you a little hesitant to re-engage?
Yeah, I was, because here's a guy that was from a former life, a life ago that was a life that I no longer live, that I knew what happened when Jim and I got together. But like I say, something seemed different, so we exchanged numbers, and I took a shot in the dark and called him, and he was different on the phone, too. And then probably the third phone call, after he dropped a couple hints of, like, recovery vernacular, I don't know if it was doing the deal or living like, or whatever, but he kind of alluded that he was in recovery. And finally I said, are you in the program? He goes, yeah.
Do you think he was fishing, or do you think he knew that you had leaked a little?
It was that awkward, like, where we both knew, but we didn't want to be the first one to say.
Like, he knew, he kind of knew from what you were saying, and you kind of knew what he was saying.
And it started to be like he knew that I knew that he knew that I knew.
And yeah, finally, and nobody said anything until you finally did.
Yeah, I was like, are you in the program?
You took the plunge.
Yeah, I was like, I was.
So 90. you were the match in that instance,
well,
Matt.
True.
You were the match.
I was 90% confident that he was.
Yes.
We can smell it usually.
Yeah.
You can smell recovery on somebody.
Yeah. Yeah, you can.
Especially when you used to be a completely different way.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we've been talking ever since. I talk to Jim a couple times a week now, and we get together for a breakfast or a coffee occasionally, and both fathers, both coaches of our kids, both in our professional life doing well. And
pretty committed, both pretty committed dads.
Absolutely.
Because I know when I spoke to him that he very much, and to the point where that's why he couldn't make it tonight, because that was a commitment that he had made. To be with his kids.
I think the way he worded it was that, he technically has them every other weekend and maybe, some other court situation. But he sees his son 4, 5, 6 times a week, through coaching or just having him for sleepovers or whatever. And I commend Jim for that.
Absolutely.
I've said that to him other than on a radio show.
I hear you.
I'm like, dude, you go above and beyond, and it's admirable,
So do you remember the first meeting, the first time you met Jim when you were a sophomore in high school?
I don't specifically. I have to guess that it was just maybe Jim will, and he'll bust you up later.
Yeah.
I don't specifically remember meeting him, but we quickly figured out that we were very similar.
See, my fantasy was it was in gym class, and then you had a cigarette under the bleachers or something. I don't know why. I just have that in my head.
A little classic start, yeah. Danny.
Yeah, that seems to be.
We played a lot of basketball together. It might have been on a basketball court.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and then it just saw each other at some parties and just started realizing this guy likes to go like I like to go, which is hard and to the edge of the envelope and all of that, you know. And,
mm-hmm.
Do
you remember a particular party that you went to with him where you realized that he was like that?
I remember many situations like that.
I guess the good news is you remember. Yeah.
All of them vaguely.
Yeah,
bad.
Right.
Brownouts. Yeah, it was, you know, there were times when we would talk on the phone and it was like, you know, he's going to get the bottle.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to get the case of beer. He's going to get the bag of this,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then we'll be covered.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
jelly beans.
Make
yeah.
sure we had jelly beans and we were not going to run out.
And that was like an unspoken, that was an easy to plan thing with him.
Oh yeah. I mean, usually we had surplus.
I
know,
see.
I mean,
right.
We made sure that we didn't run out, and that, for whatever reason, that was a big part of what was going on at that time. You know, it was on the weekends, and then it started to creep into during the week. And
were you in athletics?
I was.
Was he?
Yeah, we both were. He was bigger in soccer. I played football all through high school, and did fairly well and maintained grade point averages and ACT scores and all that stuff, but
mm-hmm.
which is amazing to me when I look back. College, it got a little harder to maintain my grades, but did graduate college as well. So, yeah, it was just mayhem when we got together. I mean, I've got some stories
mm-hmm.
to share, not to glorify it, but just to give you an example.
Sure.
Of,
yeah.
You know, like, I was the kid when I was growing up that was, my mom would even tell me, you know, you're a risk taker.
Mm-hmm.
You need to be aware of that. And I had genetic predisposition on both sides of my family for substance abuse,
mm-hmm.
Alcoholism. Nobody mm-hmm. ever made it to recovery
mm.
on either side.
Mm.
Okay. But from a very early age, I remember like 8 years old, I was standing on top of this, by a 12-foot cliff down to a creek bed.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a creek and then like a gravel berm that led into it. And I was just half joking to my friends saying, you know, why don't one of you guys run and jump over this creek? You know, and they were all like, you're crazy. You know, it's way too far. Don't do it. And I was the guy that said, whatever. You know, I stood on the end, hung my toes over the edge, jumped,
mm-hmm.
and landed and like, my face came down and my body compressed into a lawn chair and slapped my face off of my knee, mm-hmm. fell back into the creek and, you know, got up and was like, oh, I'm okay, you
mm-hmm.
know.
Were you?
I was injured slightly.
Walk it off.
Yeah,
right.
Hey,
yeah.
You're pretty rubber.
Right. Yeah.
Stage.
Rub some dirt in it. Yeah.
So when I got together with Jim, you know, I was used to being the guy that would take the risks, that would be the outlandish one, if you will, or the guy that was willing to maybe drive when you shouldn't.
Mm-hmm.
Drive
a little faster, perhaps?
Faster around turns or off-road or jump things or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
And I was used to playing that role and having people say, you know, that's crazy or you shouldn't do that or, oh, I kind of like it, but I'd never do that. And then when I would get together with Jim, he would do what I would do and take it one notch further type of deal.
Mm-hmm.
So, for instance, I recall one night where we were intoxicated,
mm-hmm.
to put it mildly,
mm-hmm.
and it's very early in the morning. We're talking, you know, get arrested early, 1 a.m.
Mm-hmm.
probably.
Mm-hmm.
And his father had this new sports car that was fast and a two-seater. And his dad was out of town. And the bright idea was, let's take this thing out for a drive. And sure. Jim drove, and there's some railroad tracks at the bottom of a hill in South Elgin that I think they have since adjusted to be less abrupt and less of a launching pad. But at the time, there was about a 2-football field run from a turn off of, I think, Route 25 down towards the river, and then you would hit these tracks and it would level off and it would kind of act like a ramp, and then it would go back down and you'd cross the river. So what I remember is Jim taking the turn and hammering the accelerator, and the car just shifts, and we're going 40 and then 50, and I'm like, he's going to let off. He's certainly going to brake. He's certainly going to, you know, not keep the accelerator down. He hammers the accelerator all the way to the railroad tracks. Now we're airborne, and I remember looking into the side view mirror here and also looking at a guy on the sidewalk that was walking. So what I remember seeing is in the side view mirror, once we landed, there were sparks flying. And the
car bottomed out.
The car bottomed out. Yeah, we were in the air for a bit. And then this guy on the sidewalk was literally going like this, like an Arsenio Hall.
Like pumping, like, way to go.
Like, yeah. Oh, that was awesome. And, yeah, so that was just an example.
Did you guys watch a lot of Dukes of Hazzard?
No.
Yeah.
I did, actually.
Yeah, but we don't want to go there. We don't admit that.
Yeah. So, I mean, he would just do things that I don't think I would have done that, you know?
You don't?
And the way he worded it when we spoke earlier in the week was, you get alcohol and drugs in my system. This is Jim talking.
Mm-hmm.
You don't know what you're going to get.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to be pushing the envelope and doing crazy things and not going to stop until it's all the way to the edge. And,
yeah.
Yeah,
and you were happy to accompany him or occasionally lead the charge?
Yeah, I think Jim was in the car once when I got a DUI, you know, and absolutely. There were times when we would go off-roading in my dad's Jeep and just, you know, get crazy, and other instances. But, you know, I fed off of the adrenaline that he would provide. You know, and I think it was back and forth, you know. We were a dangerous combo together.
Yeah, because you were the one that set the whole... I think I told you, the title of the show was... Well, we played with it a little bit, but Matches and Gasoline or Matches and Kerosene or something like that. And you had said Candle and Kerosene, maybe. I don't know. You had said something like that. That's where I got the idea.
Yeah.
So, I keep thinking to myself, you know, now as I listen to the stories, yeah, he sounds more like the match, but are there any instances of times where you were more the match and he was more the gas?
Not that immediately come to mind or that I'm willing to discuss on radio. there were other things that Jim and I were involved in that, you know, were before I'm married.
That and less than legal things.
Yeah, less than legal things and morally inappropriate things. And, you know, it was not good. You know, I remember one night what I remember of the night is he lived in this awesome house out in St. Charles, and they had like a loft with hay in it. I don't think they had horses, but they had a loft with a barn and hay up there. I mean, that was a perfectly good place to go drink a bottle.
Sure.
Just hang out up there at 17, 18 years old and, you know, talk about whatever we were solving the world's problems. And then we went inside his house and listened to Neil Young. Turned me on to Neil Young. And that was the first, I mean, you know those moments where, like, the first time you heard Comfortably Numb?
Yeah.
Pink Floyd?
Yeah.
Amazing.
The only way you can, and you can't possibly say that if you're not under the influence of something, or maybe multiple things.
Perhaps. My encounters with Comfortably Numb or Neil Young have always been, the first time was always under the influence. So.
Yeah, there's something about that, the music and the memory, isn't there?
Yeah, I don't know what that is, but he turned me on to Neil Young, and I remember just listening to it in his room and thinking, this guy is so talented. Neil Young is amazing. How have I not heard this before?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, so.
Did you ever hear Neil Young straight?
I love
you still
him
like him?
Yeah.
Okay, well then
yeah,
we can
absolutely.
Then we can roll with that then.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right. So and then how long did you guys then, you must have known each other then for a while in college?
Yeah, a couple of years into college. It started to drift when I went away to school down at Western Illinois. Well, where I went away to school at, and but my first semester out of school, I was at a school that was closer,
mm-hmm.
and I'm 18, you know,
mm-hmm.
in college.
And are you living at home?
No,
going to school,
I'm
or are you living
in a dorm.
Oh, okay.
And talk about a training ground for an alcoholic.
Mm-hmm.
College
mm-hmm.
was like, I mean, you're expected to party. You're supposed to party, and now you're free to do whatever you want. And
mm-hmm.
I had no idea how to act like a responsible adult, mm-hmm. you know. So it was my first semester at school was crazy. I had always been a pretty good student, you
right.
know, AB student. And my first semester in college was like 2 C's, 2 D's, and an F. And my dad was like, you're coming back home.
Right.
You're going to finish, you're going to pay for
mm-hmm.
yourself to go to 2 years of junior college.
Mm-hmm.
Show me you can do that, and then you can go away to school. And that's
mm-hmm.
what I did. But it started to become very apparent to me that when Jim and I got together, bad things would happen. A lot of fun would happen, but...
Did he go to the same school, or did you just see him when you came back?
He would come out a lot. And
oh, he would come.
Yeah,
he would
worded
come.
It as any chance to go to a college and party, I was all over it. So yeah, he would
right.
come out and hang out. And,
mm-hmm.
You know.
Was he going to school somewhere else, or he wasn't going to school?
I think he did maybe a year, and then he
mm-hmm.
started working.
Yeah, I think when we talked, I think you mentioned
yeah.
that, right? So yeah, okay. So he would come out, and you guys would still hang out. Was it still matches and gasoline?
Always.
Yeah.
Always, yeah. I mean, it was either...
Did you get in any trouble in college?
Yeah, I did.
Well, you got your grades sucked.
Grades sucked.
Yeah.
Yeah, there were other forms of trouble, though. You know, I think my first DUI was at school.
Mm-hmm.
And that was at 18 years old.
Mm-hmm.
And I had another one in college at, like, 21.
Mm-hmm.
And then another one...
and then
23, I think. So
did we stop? Did we stop there, or did we?
Yeah, I had
yeah.
Three.
Okay,
yeah.
That's pretty good. That's
yeah.
that should be a pretty. That should be a fairly
I
good.
Was, again, you know, the guy that
reminder
when we would be at that moment when you're outside of the bar or you're outside of the party and everybody's like, dude, we need to call a cab or
mm-hmm.
we need to, you know, not drive. You know, I can't do it.
Mm-hmm.
Give me the keys, whether it was my car or not, you know.
You could handle it, or so you thought.
Yeah, yeah, and this is unrelated to Jim, but this is another quick, funny story, and if we're going over on the
we're good.
All right.
We're good.
So, I'm in West Virginia.
Hmm.
I don't know the road. There's mountains in West Virginia.
Yeah.
Very twisty road.
Yeah.
It's not my vehicle.
Hmm.
I'm with my cousins. We're all hammered. We decide to let Matt drive home, and they are going to do... You know how the rally car racers have the cockpit guy,
yeah.
the co-pilot, that
yeah,
says,
yeah.
3 clicks left, 5, 2 degrees,
oh, yeah.
bank 920, and he's like predicting the road for the guy? They
yeah.
were doing that for me, but it was more like, okay, hammer it. Okay, big right coming up. Slow down just a little bit, though. Not too much. And this was with the lights off.
Oh.
By the way, by the moonlight.
Oh. By moonlight.
Yeah, moonlight, rally racing.
Rally racing in the moonlight in West Virginia.
Mountains. Mm-hmm.
Wasted. Yeah. Yeah. Didn't get caught?
Didn't get caught on that one, but
yeah.
A lot of laughter and
mm-hmm.
good times.
Mm-hmm. No one...
Very close to the edge of...
Yeah. That'd be...
That'd be lights out.
Yeah.
We were going anywhere from 40 to 80. On the road.
And right.
There were trees everywhere.
Yeah, so it would be.
Yeah.
Yeah. Hamburger City.
Yeah.
Yeah, but everyone in the car loved it at the time.
Sure. So, and So that was, you were in college then, or was that after that?
You know, that was probably around my senior year.
Okay. Yeah. Did you still have, and were you and Jim still connected at that time, or
it
did you
started to fizzle at that point? And
yeah,
you know, Jim, I've never really gotten a feeling from him that he thought this the way that I thought it. I mean, I was literally scared of our interaction. I mean, it was like the same feeling. I call it like a twisted thorn
mm-hmm.
inside of your chest,
mm-hmm.
just below your sternum,
mm-hmm.
that's tight,
mm-hmm.
and it feels like you're like twisting on it. That feeling would happen to me before I would go out drinking, not just with Jim, but in general.
Mm-hmm.
Because
you didn't know what would happen either, did you?
I was scared of it.
Right.
I had fear about my drinking, but you know how you ease that?
Yeah, drink.
Tension? Yeah.
Yeah.
You have a couple before you go out.
And yeah.
It saves you a buck or two, too.
Right.
So
economy,
that was towards the
yeah.
end of the...
That's called economy pre-drinking, right?
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
But
I was the one that was kind of fearful of our interaction, you know. And
more so than him.
I think even subconsciously to some degree, I was like, right. I know if I hang out with this guy, it's not good.
Right.
You know, and
I got a thorn in that, and whether he has one or not, you feel your own.
Yeah, and, you know, I'm having a hard enough time dealing with my own situation.
Right.
Let alone two guys that are in the same boat.
Right.
When did you first notice that? I mean, how far along was that before you were aware of that feeling?
You know, that was into early 20s, you know, second, third year of college type of deal. And then it kind of was like that until I quit. You know, I would have that sensation.
Did other people get dragged into the vortex, or were you and Jim the ones that suffered the consequences of your own?
We had some other running buddies. You know, I don't remember any huge arrests that involved Jim and I, or you know, huge debacles where we got caught or anybody got hurt or anything like that. But we had some running buddies that we liked to, you know, bring into the mix. And
mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
They would dabble in our craziness and then go back and say, well, we're not going to hang out with those guys for a couple of weeks.
That's what I was wondering. Did you ever get the sense that there were people that didn't want to hang out with you or did and then
sure.
would shy away?
Sure, yeah. And the ones that weren't my friend were the ones that would just go away.
Right.
They wouldn't say anything.
Right.
Guys that did.
What'd they say?
Yeah,
what'd they say?
One good friend that I started to sense that he was pulling away a little bit, if
mm-hmm.
you will. And this was a kid that was going to the U of I on a scholarship for
mm-hmm.
athletics.
Mm-hmm.
And he was like, you know, I love you, man, and we're good friends, but you're like Jekyll and Hyde, and I don't know what's going to happen, and I just can't risk it. He's like, so that's what's been going on, is I can't afford to be around you.
Right. You got a scholarship at stake and
yeah.
too much. Mm. Yeah. What did you think when he said that?
I thought he was right. And it hurt when he said it. You know, it was like, I know that he's right, but I'm not really ready to do
yeah.
anything about it just yet.
Hmm. Yeah. Well, I think maybe this will be a good time for us to take a little bit of a break. I know we have a song we want to play, and I've got a couple other things I want to plug, so we'll put the song on, take a little break, and when we come back, maybe we can sort of talk about that empty space in the middle and then how recovery started, and maybe we talk a little bit about the getting back together again part.
Cool.
All right.
Sounds good.
Good deal. What do you got for us?
Peter, we got a little James Taylor.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, you were just pointing at me because you wanted me to read the ads. Is that what you...
Yeah, read the ads.
Yeah, okay. All right. Can you turn that up?
Yeah.
Turn it up a little bit.
I was fading it in. It was
fading
in.
Oh, you were fading it in. Oh, okay.
Producing over here.
Okay. All right. So, couple of plugs. First one is our favorite band, Double Take, and you can find out about Double Take by going to doubletakechicago.com.
Yes, you can.
They've been playing locally. I can't remember the name of the place they played last night. I just looked on their website. But they play locally. They're good. They're a fun band. 50s through current music.
That was some of it right there.
Oh, we just a
touch.
What was that?
Brick
House.
I don't think I have any of their upcoming dates yet on their website, but what was it? The 9th?
The 9th, last night.
Bannerman's,
okay. Yeah. I don't know, where's Bannerman's?
Roosevelt? Bartlett, I think.
Bartlett,
yeah.
Okay. Yeah, they play locally. A lot of fun. Good dance band, good music. Another friend of ours is Dirty Laundry Designs. They do recovery cards and bookmarks and things like that, and we've got some of their cards here. They're really nice. I have some in my office. They're for recovery occasions, anniversaries, and things like that.
Some really cool cards. Yeah.
They really are.
They have a website too, don't they?
Yeah, dirtylaundrydesigns.com. Thank you.
All right.
Great how we work together, isn't it?
You guys are a dynamic duo.
Dynamic duo. Definitely dynamic duo. And our final plug for this evening is Franz Chiropractic, Dr. Tom Franz. His office is in Crystal Lake.
New office location for him, yes?
Yes, it is a new office. He's in a new office, and he's a great guy, and he's a good chiropractor. And if you'd like to contact Dr. Tom Franz for chiropractic care, you can do so by calling 815-444-9466.
Dr. Franz.
So call Dr. Franz. The Franzinator.
Yeah, check out the new office location there, right? In, conveniently located in beautiful Crystal Lake.
Yeah. So those are our friends, and that's who we wanted to talk to tonight, or talk about tonight. All right. So we'll go back to, talking to Matt here. And thanks to James Taylor for his lovely background music.
Yeah.
While we took care of business.
Quite nice.
It was a nice touch that it was about friends.
It's no Neil Young though.
No, it's not.
I could have done.
You know
that.
What? We should have done that.
Play Neil Young.
Yeah.
Maybe on the way out.
Yeah on the way out, shall we?
Do that. Yeah.
Got a favorite? I know one of the older albums is Harvest. What's on Harvest? I mean, well, let's see what comes.
Heart of Gold.
Heart of Gold.
Old
yeah.
Man. Old Man's pretty good.
Yeah. The Needle and the Damage Done.
Ooh.
Mm-hmm. Ooh. Anyway,
somebody's
okay.
A fan.
Yeah. So let's just see what comes up. Okay, and sometimes we take questions on the air. Other times our studio audience has questions. And we have a question from the studio audience, which we'll address first. Did you look at this?
I did.
You want me to read it again?
Sure.
Yeah. Okay, letting something like this run its course or forcing yourself into help you know you need but aren't ready for, which is better in your opinion? So in other words, letting something go, if you have a choice.
Right.
Letting something go till its logical conclusion or forcing yourself into the help you know you need mm-hmm. but aren't ready for. What's the better option? Are those options for you? Or were they options for you?
Well, when I was...
Good question, by the way.
Yeah, great question. When I was 18, I was forced into counseling and treatment.
Yeah.
It didn't work. Voices in my head said, you're too young, you have partying to do, there's no way you're not going to do this for the rest of your life. And I was raised in an environment, I already mentioned the genetics aspect of it, but there was some active alcoholism going on, and... occasionally father would come home with a little Buzz on, want to take a drive in the Mustang, and I'm driving, I'm 16, and he wants to stop and get some beers, and then he cracks one and hands it to me, so now he's like letting me drink and drive with him. And then I remember the first time that we smoked a joint together, he was really pleased. At that moment, it's like, finally, I get to share this with you. So, you know, I fed right into it, but,
right.
You know, I was...
So there wasn't like, that was the more natural way of being than anything that might have resembled not.
I mean, literally, my wife says things to me today that she was told when she was a kid. Whether it's discipline or, you know, your behavior will follow you for the rest of your life is what a big one hers. You know, what you do today will impact you for the rest of your life. She's talking to our kids at this point.
Right, and you're going, wow, I never heard that before.
Wow.
That's what a concept.
Yeah. That would have been a good one to hear.
Yeah.
I mean, I found things under bathroom.
A little shocking even now to hear it, you know, but yeah.
I found things under bathroom sinks and... Anyway, at 18, I wasn't ready to hear it, so that was being forced in. And, you know, the other time that I tried recovery, when I was 25 in the year 2000, I went in with a half-hearted attempt, didn't do what I was supposed to do, but knew, because my dad had kicked me out at 25 with a college degree.
Time to go, Matt.
Yeah. So I knew that I wasn't going to make it living the way I was living, which was... out of control, drinking and drugging.
Right.
So I stopped drinking, went to some recovery, didn't do what I was supposed to do, and was out of there. You know, like,
right.
Everybody smelled funny, and there were a lot of weird language they were talking about. And
yeah.
So that was me seeking it, you know, wanting to do something, but I didn't really do the work. So I went on to what they call the... marijuana maintenance program for about 4 years because I knew drinking would kill me.
Right.
And then to condense this way down, I found a reason to drink out of the country because it won't follow me back from out of the country.
Oh.
What happens in Mexico stays in Mexico.
Oh.
It's a long way to go for a cocktail.
I made the decision on the flight.
Yeah.
So then it was the next time it was I'm out of the state. It won't follow me back to this state.
Right.
And then it was, oh, well, screw it. There's drinking here, you know? Like, I'm just back now.
Right.
And I drank for a year.
Mm-hmm.
And things got really bad in that 1 year of drinking. I was right back to where I was at the end of my previous drinking, which was literally sometimes I would make it home and other times I would not. You know, I would wake up somewhere and not know where I was, or I would I've woken to the sun on my face, laying in between the sidewalk and the road. You know, I've gotten kicked out of places. I was a big rageaholic when I was, you know, in a serious alcoholic state.
So altercations weren't by any means out of the question.
I would find somebody that needed to be taught a lesson, and I was, for some reason, the guy that needed
to teach
them a lesson.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and
yeah,
it was insanity. I mean, I'm so glad that I had changed.
Yeah,
you know, but that was part of it. Just the rage valve would open.
So let me. So you know, here's the thing that I wonder about. You know, so you know the original question there was about whether you should do something before you know you need help, but do something about it versus waiting until it runs its course.
Yeah.
But so let me just sort of go around the side of that one and say, do you think that first time you went into treatment that had, like when you were 18, had any bearing on what happened eventually when you...
I do.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I believe in court-mandated stuff.
And yeah.
I believe if you...
So even though, like you said, I mean, you said just to... I mean, I'm not, you know, but you said it didn't work.
Right.
But what you meant, it didn't work then. You didn't get sober then.
I remember the counselor looking at me and holding up a can of Coke and saying, if this is a beer, you need to look at this beer as having a skull and crossbones on it. And this is poison to you because you're an alcoholic.
Yeah.
At 18.
And you remember that.
I remember that.
Yeah. So something happened. And then the second treatment that you were in when you were... I got to get remind me to get some cuffs with skull and crossbones on it too.
Good idea.
In fact, I think I have one.
Yeah.
But anyway,
no one's going to want the coffee if you do
that's
that.
True. That's true. They'll go, oh, it's poison to you. But the second treatment you were in when you were 25, then, so did that? Was there elements of that that even though you were half-assed, half-hearted? Well, we're not FCC regulated, so I can say that. But anyway, did that have elements of help in it?
Yeah, I knew that there was recovery available there.
Right.
You know, and that this was everywhere. You know,
right.
This 12-step program was available everywhere in the world.
Yeah.
You know, I knew that people were getting sober there.
So you got some pieces there.
Yeah.
Even though you were, in some respects, just going along to get along.
And, I think that... quote-unquote recreational drinkers or normal drinkers, they don't have those thoughts of, I wonder if I'm an alcoholic. I don't think that they think that. I think if you get to that point where you're like, I wonder if I'm an alcoholic, chances are pretty good that you should just follow that instinct and go check it out.
Well, see, that's what they do to you in treatment. They say stuff like that, and then you can never get it out of your head, no matter what. You know, you think you're an alcoholic. Well, what do you think I'm in treatment for? I mean, you know, here you are. You're in people don't end up in alcohol and drug treatment because they're playing checkers too often.
Right.
You know. So anyway, you've been in you were in treatment twice.
Yeah.
But I guess the point of all that was
did have to run its course.
It had to run its course.
It
wasn't just one decision.
The teacher doesn't appear until the student is ready.
Yeah.
And I wasn't ready to change until I had enough pain.
Yeah.
I had enough.
Yeah.
You know, but Jim went off and we separated for a decade. And he had his own version of that pain, and he's told me pieces of it. I want another detailed version because it sounds really juicy, but he kind of alluded to being in a vehicle searching out something late at night and getting a gun pulled on him and, you know, ditching out of the car and running for his life and hiding in some bushes and that type of thing.
Yeah.
You know, and he was like, what am I doing? I might be a little out of control here.
Yeah.
You know, and mine was...
Jim, if you're listening, you're going to have to come on and correct Matt if he's wrong about that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or we'll catch up to you later. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure he can tell it much, much better than I did.
But anyway, he was doing
his... Cliff Notes version.
In that 10-year span...
He was running his course.
He was running his course.
I was running my course.
Who sobered up first?
He did, by a year.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You guys?
Well, now 3 years.
Yeah, that's right. We had a slight adjustment. Okay.
Yeah, I changed my sobriety date today because I had a situation 2 years sober where I found some old prescription medication that was not mine in my house, and it was like 4 years old medication. So I had a tiny little pain, and I took it with the intention of taking a little break from my mind and going on vacation for 6-8 hours.
Right.
I wanted to alter my state.
It didn't work. Anyway,
it didn't work. Then I took another one about 2 hours later, and I was like, this stuff's crap. And then 2 hours later, I took another one just to see if it was going to do anything. And I don't really think it ever did much, but I took those pills with every intention of changing my mind,
getting high.
I was trying to.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, that was 2 years sober, and instead of X amount of years sober now, I'm X minus two.
Yeah.
You know, and it felt good to come clean on that because it's been on my mind, and you know how things just kind of bounce around in there, and you're like, man, I should probably talk about that.
Sure.
I should probably
keep it.
Do something about
sure.
that.
Keep it clean. Get it cleaned up. Absolutely. So, So he got sober about a year before you, or three.
Yeah.
But
one or three.
And then how long into sobriety were you when you finally got reconnected?
4 years for me, 5 for him.
Okay. All right.
Yeah.
Okay.
We by chance met in Dick's Sporting Goods.
Yeah.
And I walked by and he yelled my name and we smelled recovery, I think, at that point.
The pheromones or the language or whatever it is.
There's something there.
The twinkle in the eye, the
Place
is good.
You know, if you're an alcoholic and you like somebody, they're probably alcoholic. That's the way I think, anyway, you know. And I really like you, man.
I don't know what that means.
Yeah, that's okay. You know, it's just a way. You really liked Jim, didn't you?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
That's what it means.
Yeah. It was great to see him.
That's the only thing you need to know.
Yeah, and then in the back of my mind, I was like, I wonder if he's still nuts.
Right. Did you guys, since you've been reconnected, have you had the thought that he might get you in trouble in sobriety?
No.
Okay.
No. I mean, Jim works a tight recovery program.
Good.
You know, he has the elements that a good recovery program have in place.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he has a regular schedule. He has regular communication. Mm. You know, he's accountable. I wasn't worried about that.
Yeah, how do you guys interact?
It took 3 phone calls, though, for us to smell it on each other and talk about it.
Okay.
And finally, I was like, are you in recovery? He's like, yeah. I got sober in 2004. I'm like, wow, I got sober in 2005. And we've been talking ever since then. And it's nice to reunite with somebody that you've known from a previous life and known for a long time. And things are drastically different today than they were back then.
So, which actually brings me to one of the things I wanted to ask you is what's the difference between a friendship with somebody when you're under the, you know, when you're drinking, when you're practicing your alcoholism, and a friendship when you're in recovery?
I think at the most basic level, it would be that one is out of selfishness and one is out of a true, genuine friendship.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and caring about somebody, you know, and just enjoying the life together. Whereas before it was, what's he going to bring to the party? What am I going to bring to the party? You know, how am I vicariously going to be able to live through his craziness? And at the same time, how is he going to enhance my buzz?
Right.
My, you know, whatever I was getting into. So, I mean, I was about the party. I wasn't about being Jim's really good friend.
Yeah.
You know, it's just, I think we were both like that, so it worked for a while. Not to make it too shallow, but, I mean, we did have sober times too back then. You know,
mm-hmm.
we would go play sports together, or movies or whatever, but you know, it revolved around the substances for sure. And I think it was very volatile too, that it could just end at any moment or blow up at any moment. And today, you know, we communicate several times a week and, you know, we share challenges with, whether it's professional challenges or fatherly challenges or recovery challenges or
do you feel like you support him in your way?
I'd like to think so. I know that he helps, you know, he's, to me, when we talk, he gives me a very stable feeling.
Yeah, you mentioned that to me.
He gives me a feeling of like, this guy's got his shit together. You know, he's well adjusted, he's well spoken, he's confident in who he is, he's comfortable in his own skin, he knows who he is, what he's about, and where he's going.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes I come to him with a challenge that I'm dealing with in my path,
mm-hmm. Like you're not so self-assured or not so comfortable at that time.
At that moment, sure. Maybe somebody said something at work, or maybe I'm dealing with an issue with my wife, or who knows what it is. But I come to him with some form of squirreliness, and I try to like get him to say, "Yeah, me too." You ever get like that? Nah, man. I just keep it really simple, you know. I have faith, and I do the deal, and no, I don't get like that. I'm like,
really?
Really? Wow. All right. Awesome.
Yeah.
So I just.
So how do you do that then? Yeah, but yeah.
Yeah, I don't know if he's, Some people are just like that, I suppose, you know, where they're just a little more mellow with what's going on. And
yeah.
They don't have the.
Maybe that's one of those. Maybe that's one of those things. I mean, you know, yeah, you're wound a little tighter. You have things that come up for you or whatever. And, you know, you go here, you go there.
Yeah.
Maybe opposites attract. I don't know. I've heard that.
Could be.
You know.
Yeah.
Is your wife pretty low-key stable?
Ooh. Stable, yes. Low-key, sometimes. She'll admit that she likes a little control.
Mm-hmm.
But she likes things to be just so.
Yeah.
But she's like this amazing woman that I would be remiss if I didn't mention, because she's a huge, huge part of my life.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she's been there from the get-go. She saw marijuana maintenance. She saw a year of drinking.
Okay.
I married her. I started drinking regularly after the wedding. Like the day of the wedding.
This was the out of the country, out of the state, and then back home regularly.
If you can picture now I got her.
Yeah.
And now I can reveal who I really am.
That sick,
evil thought went through my head.
Yeah.
So she's been with me from...
She's seen the whole deal.
Yeah, and she's like an amazing mom. She's loving and caring, and it's just awesome.
And she makes a mean jambalaya, I might say.
Mean jambalaya.
That goes a long way.
You got to come over for stuffed shells one night.
Okay. And German chocolate cake. Thank you.
Very nice. You know what? We've got a question from our Twitter here.
Okay.
We've got time here. I think we do still.
Yeah, we got a little time. Sure.
Question for Matt. Due to your genetic susceptibility, do you think that you will ever not have any urges?
No.
Can you say more about that, Matt?
Sure.
Short answer.
You know, alcoholism is a subtle foe. It's not alcohol that is subtle. It's alcoholism. And, you know, I put down drinking and drugging, but that doesn't mean that it doesn't creep into other areas of my life that can include food, sugar, something that I'm not comfortable saying on the air. I've had the urge of gambling when I've just done like some little minor poker with buddies, but I feel that rush, that tension, that excitement the same way. It can be, adrenaline.
Mm-hmm.
So I think I deal with urges on a pretty regular basis, which is why I focus on recovery on a really regular basis.
And would those other urges... Or those other addictive things eventually in some way lead back to drinking? Or
I think it could, because if you let your instincts run wild, you're going to wind up in a situation where you're just miserable enough, you're just defeated enough, you're just messed up enough for the question of, you know... The drink becomes an okay solution to ease some of that.
Yeah, and it seems like the disease is a pretty smart, a pretty slick foe. I mean, just that little story about it's okay to drink out of the country, then it's okay to drink out of the state, and then and then here we are drinking at home. And it's like, I mean, it sounds crazy when you say it, but at the time, I imagine it was, it seemed logical.
Yeah, so I don't necessarily have urges to drink today.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I've had my father pass away.
Mm-hmm.
I've had other situations that are traumatic.
Mm-hmm.
I've had, you know, some real world stuff go on.
Sure,
and
job stuff.
My first instinct or first urge is not to drink.
Mm-hmm.
My first instinct is to get into action and do something about it that is recovery related, because that's the most important thing in my life.
Mm-hmm.
Period. And that is... That is the thing that is the foundation that everything else in my life is built on.
Yeah.
You know, if that piece isn't in place, everything goes to hell in a handbasket very quickly. So when the shit hits the fan, so to speak,
mm-hmm.
my first instinct, thank God,
mm-hmm.
today is not to drink. My
yeah.
first instinct and first urge is to find somebody to talk to.
Yeah.
Find somebody to share this with. Find somewhere to go that is safe. Yeah.
Mhm. And so hopefully we've adequately covered our tweeted question.
Yeah, I'd love to if we could, you know, maybe paraphrase that a little bit, because there's only so many characters, but put that back out on Twitter if that's okay with you.
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay.
Through at Rick Atwater.
Let's do that. Okay. And then is there any? We're probably right near the end of our time here, so just let me ask.
It goes so quick.
It did, didn't it? It time flies. And is there anything that you think that would be helpful to the listening audience that you could say about recovery and friendship? The relationship between recovery and friendship, or your experience with finding a recovering friend?
It's been wonderful. I think don't be afraid to put yourself out there. And I was hesitant to ask him.
Yeah.
You know.
Not hesitant to jump off the bridge when we were eight, but hesitant to ask him if he was recovering.
Exactly. Because I'm you know, breaking my anonymity.
Big risk, yeah.
Right?
Yeah,
there's some risk involved there.
Sure.
But don't be afraid to do that. And, you know, if you have friends that maybe you think need recovery, but haven't quite found it, don't hit them over the head with a book. Don't preach to them, you know. Invite them over for a meal.
Mm.
Bring them into your house and show them what your life is like today. And
even
if they knew you before and they know you now,
yeah,
what better example is there of a, you know, a situation of hope?
Yeah.
And for them to feel you loving them, feel you showing them, opening yourself up and exposing what your life is like today. You know, you don't need to shove it down somebody's throat. Just be yourself and be so confident in who you are and how you go about your recovery
mm-hmm.
that they can't help but see a good example.
Yeah, and I was going to say that in your story, one of the best friends you had was that athletic guy that went to U of I
mm-hmm.
and didn't want to hang out with you anymore because he said, I love you, but I can't hang out with you.
Yeah.
That was a good friend.
Absolutely.
That was a really good friend.
He was
friend.
On my list of people I called once I made it to recovery. And his response was like, forget about it, man.
Forget about it.
We were young. We were all acting crazy. You know what I mean? We're all good.
That's good. Well, listen, I really thank you for coming on tonight. And do you have Neil Young?
Yeah, absolutely.
Play Neil.
Oh, cool.
Play some Neil. I do thank you for coming.
Thank you, Rick.
And
thanks, Chris.
It was a great story and a good message. And thanks to our listeners and our studio audience for making us a successful little underground support source for the recovering community. And what are we playing?
Heart of Gold.
We'll email our reminders for next week's show, and as always, look at recovery from a wide and open perspective. Remember to check recoveryinternetradio.com for all the archive shows.
.com.
And sign up for our email reminder list. Remember, too, that we want to hear from you so we know where you are. As always, live today, love yourself and your neighbor, and together we'll trudge the happy road to destiny. We hope you've enjoyed the show. See you at 8 p.m. next Sunday night.
Woo!